Okay. Hi, I'm not on. There you go. There. Now I'm on. Now I'm on, but the volume, how's the volume up there? Great. Nice. Great echo. Can you hear me up there?
Okay. Yeah.
Acceptable? Can you all hear me up there?
Yep.
Hi. Okay. Hi. Welcome to March. March 2nd. Less than 3 weeks till spring. Okay. Today, challenge. Questions about the macro system. And then we will start to review for the eco exam, which is a week from today, in here. The review sessions are confirmed as I had announced them Monday. I'm sorry. What did I just say? A week from today. I said that. I did. I'm sorry. If I just said that the eco exam is a week from today, that's not true. The eco exam is Monday. The very next Monday. Did you catch it? They don't listen to me. Thank you for listening to me. I really appreciate it. They're good. They're really good. But, okay. So the eco exam is a week from 2 days ago, from Monday. Thank you. Okay. So, before we talk about macro systems for a few minutes, are there other questions about other things? Housekeeping, the eco exam, the review sessions? I was just giving everybody else a chance. The question is, would the exercise, the major exercise that is due a week from today, would I consider giving you a little break on when that's due because it's such a big assignment? Is that a lone voice in the wilderness? No, okay. All right, let's look at the pros and cons. Why is it scheduled for Wednesday instead of the same day as the eco exam? No, I know that's not what you're asking. I'm just saying, okay, but let's look at, in the past, I have had it due on the day of the eco exam. And students found that somewhat overwhelming. One of the hopes is that you will use that exercise as a way to study for and review for the eco exam. So if it's not due on Monday or Wednesday, and people aren't going to start writing it until after the eco exam, because they're not going to see that those two are connected. Writing the exercise is, I'm certain, helpful for preparing for the eco exam. So probably the mistake is I should have had it due today. Well, I should have it due Monday and the eco exam on Wednesday. Maybe that's what I was Freudianly trying to come to when I said the eco exam was. But I can't do that because some of you have scheduled your timing to
do different things on different days, right? I would get in trouble if I switched an eco exam and the exercise. But we have noted that for next year, the exercise would be due before the eco exam. Thank you. That's very helpful. Okay, so if I give you an extension on the exercise, then you're not going to get the benefit of that, so of doing it at the same time. And second, if I give you an extension and it's not due until the following Monday, then you're not going to do any of the reading for the next unit until after you finish it, which means that it'll be a week later before you actually do the reading that you need to be doing for the next unit. Right? Right. You had a... I'm sorry? Any of the hypotheses that apply in that exercise. And the idea is to find support for as many of them as you possibly can. Okay? So, that comes down to all of the arguments are in favor of not extending the exercise. But if it would make you think I was flexible, a nice guy, not rigid, other adjectives that would be favorable, and if you need the extra time, if it would really improve the product and relieve you because you have 32 exams and papers due next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, then feel free to turn in the exercise any time between Wednesday. Well, you can turn it in any time. If you want to bring it for the eco exam or give it to us today, we'll take it, right? Yeah. So feel free to turn it in any time between now and a week from Monday. And I know what's going on in your mind. You know, why did it take him all that time? Why didn't you just say, oh, sure, go ahead. So I wanted you to understand that these things all have implications. And now having said that you may take, if you wish, you may have an extension on that exercise to the following Monday, which is the 11th. I don't know, whatever. No, it's the 7 plus 7, which is the 14th. Monday is the 7th. Your weeks only seem like they're 5 days long. Now, just remember that I normally am quite willing to give people extra time to do things if, on the assumption that they will actually do them better and stay healthier. So, you know, it's my contribution to mental health. But remember that that extension is also extra rope. And, you know, to give you enough rope and feed your procrastination and just delay things until they're absolutely due, then that rope is... Rope has two uses. You can either hang yourself with it, or you can use it to make a rope ladder to climb up out of the deep hole that you're in work-wise. One or the other. So I'll leave it up to you. Okay, so somebody remind me to put on the website that the exercise has a not a new due date, an automatic take-it-yourself extension. I'm not going to change the due date. I'm just going to give a blanket extension if you need it. Okay? Without penalty. My kids think I'm a patsy. No, they say, you're a pushover, Dad. We really love you. Can I borrow another 500? No, anyway.
Other questions? That particular exercise, some of you had forgotten that it was due, right? Therefore, I should just remind you that it is due. And that it's exercise 4 we're talking about. Assignment 4. And that it looks like that, which is much too small for you to read. But what it asks you to do is to describe an important event or series of related events in your life. So pick something that you're comfortable talking about. We say important because we want it to be of interest to you to do this exercise rather than think about last Thursday, you know, whatever that was. And if it's an important event, you probably already have some ideas about what it did for your development. Now, going to summer camp every year for 22 years probably affected your development, or learning to ride a horse, or having your family take in 6 foster children all your age. You know, that kind of thing has an effect on your development. So we assume that you have some kind of assumptions or interpretation of what impact that had, positive and or negative. Then what we would like you to do is to take your description and your understanding of its impact on your development and think about it using the concepts from this unit. Okay. So think about, is there an ecological transition or more? Perhaps there are more. Define that. I mean, illustrate it. The molar activity, a change in developmental status, change in diet, all those other things. And then, is there any support for proposition C or F? Can you find support for 3 of the hypotheses? Support for means, can you find ways in your description of your event in your life, can you find ways in which those propositions appear to apply and be true? Support for at least 3 of the hypotheses. Are there ways in which those hypotheses can be used to describe and interpret your experience in ways that make those hypotheses seem to be valid or useful? Okay? That's all. That's all the exercise is. Give us enough information about your interpretation so that we can see that you have applied the propositions and the concepts accurately and appropriately. If you go through that list and find that you can't find support for Bronfenbrenner's concepts, then one of the possibilities is that you're not digging deeply enough, or you haven't figured out what Bronfenbrenner is about yet. The other is maybe that particular event or series of events in your life isn't as rich as something else might be. There's no demand or expectation that you reveal any secrets about your life. It's really open-ended. You've got 20 or so years of experience to draw on, so if there are things that are really important in your development that you would prefer not to use as an illustration, you don't have to. You can find something else, I'm sure. So there's no expectation. But I would like it to be autobiographical, because one of the important features for me of this course is that you can apply these concepts to your own experience. And then we'll spend a lot of time applying them to other people's experience, but I'd like for you to think about how they might apply to yours. It makes the exercise more interesting for you. Okay? Questions about the exercise? Thank you for reminding me that it was... I'm sure your classmates appreciate that too, especially those who had forgotten. Okay? Other questions?
Yes.
Well, you do have to know what they're about, but you don't have to be able to spit them back or know them word for word. What you do need to know, and the question is, a lot of the hypotheses are very similar. How can you apply them without memorizing them? What you should memorize is the concepts. So you should know what the mesosystem is, you should know how settings are related, and you should know generally what Bronfenbrenner says about settings in the mesosystem. What makes the mesosystem, that is the relations among the settings that a person is involved in, what makes those relationships supportive or not of the child's development? And when you get to then the subtleties, the subtle differences among those hypotheses, what Bronfenbrenner is doing is teasing out various possibilities. And you should know all of those. So you don't need to know which hypothesis says that it's helpful if you're involved in primary dyads or primary relationships with people in each of the settings. You don't have to know which it is, but you need to know that it is. And you should also know then that the next hypothesis, you don't have to know that, and you don't have to know its number, but the other hypothesis is subtly different because it says that the people who are in transcontextual dyads with you, it's helpful if they are also involved in primary dyadic relationships with other people in the setting. So he's teasing out the developing person and other people who are in transcontextual dyads with that person and saying that the more of those connections you have, the more involvement there is in primary dyadic relationships, the better it is for the developing person. Okay. But you don't have to know specifically. But you should have in your head, you should have on paper in your notes, in your review, whatever you're doing to review, you should have a list of everything that Bronfenbrenner talks about that is useful or helpful for a person's development. If you haven't done that yet, I would suggest that you do it. And that you go over that list of things that are helpful to development with two or three other people, and that you study for the ecosystem, the eco exam from that. Okay. But you ought to be able to tease those out from all of the hypotheses. Everything that's useful for development. Okay. And in categories. What about settings? What about relationships? What about mesosystem? What about exosystem, what about macrosystem? Okay, so under each of those categories, you've got some hypotheses that define what is helpful to a person's development. What are the conditions of settings or relationships or activities? Okay. And once you've got that, you've pretty well got it nailed. Okay. Okay. We'll come up with others, I'm sure. Let's go back for a minute and look at the notion of macrosystem. We gave it short shrift. As we were wrapping up on Monday, and I want to emphasize a couple of the major aspects of this. I've tried to illustrate it. I've given you a couple of examples in the book. The key feature here is that if you want to understand the notion of culture, for Bronfenbrenner, you need to be able to bring that to the level of the ecosystem. And how do you think about a culture in terms of the ecosystem that makes up that culture? And Bronfenbrenner argues that culture is manifested by the fact that different settings that have the same sorts of functions, like home or school or churches, different kinds of institutions, different kinds of enterprises, such as business or government, that those kinds of institutions have many different representatives within a culture. But within the culture, there will be consistency, there will be similarity across all of those within a particular culture, and that will be different from another culture. So what he's saying, very simply, is that if those consistencies across the various kinds of settings that define the macro system, and that is really what culture is, the fact that almost all of the governments that we have, for example, in our particular culture, you know, town governments, county governments, state governments, the federal government, planning commissions, you can go on and name all the different kinds of governments, school boards, university trustees, all of those examples of governments within our culture operate in very, very similar fashion. And they typically are organized with a chairperson or a person in charge who is elected to that position. Whether it's the president, the speaker of the House of Representatives, the governor, the school board chairman, the mayor, the chairman of the city council, within our culture, those settings all have great similarity because we elect the person who's going to be in charge of the functioning of that body. And that body is typically going to be elected by the people who are involved in being governed by that body, taxpayers, citizens, parents, whatever the group is. And those people who are elected to represent the citizens are all going to participate in procedures in which they are given one vote. And decisions are going to be made according to the majority of votes. Some decisions will be defined as requiring a two-thirds majority or an 80% majority or something. But those will be defined in bylaws of that particular governing body. Okay. Is that the only way to do government? No. In another culture, you might have those governments, but the person who is going to run them is appointed by the king, who is not elected by the people. The king inherits his position. Well, let's bring it up to date. The queen. The queen inherits her position from her parents. Her family has been in charge of the government for generations, and everybody accepts that legitimacy, either that or the army protects that legitimacy and gets rid of people who don't approve of it. And the queen appoints the heads of any governing bodies. So if the particular country happens to have towns or counties or districts or states involved in it, the heads are appointed by the queen. Their power comes from the queen. They may have the authority then to appoint people to carry out responsibilities. There may be no election by anybody and no voting by anybody. And you can run a country that way. And some people argue you could probably run it better, but democracy is a messy way to do things. It happens to work, but that's an opinion.
Okay.
Is that the only way to run a country? No. You can have a dictator. And some countries are run by people who have seized power by military action, and their power is enforced by military action, and they tell people what to do, and they appoint people under them to run subdivisions of the government. And they may hold elections and get 100% of the vote. That's always a fun phenomenon when it happens. Almost defines the dictatorship. Also makes it unlikely that you feel good about your vote when you've been told, you know, vote this way or else. And we will know how you voted because we're going to watch you vote. And sign your ballot, by the way. So we'll know that you voted for the dictator. Okay? So there are other ways to do things. In smaller organizations, in some small communities, which typically are not countries on their own, you can, as some of you observed yesterday, run things by consensus. Actually, town meeting in Vermont never runs by consensus, although many times it feels like it does, because when you come down to a vote, everybody who's in favor say aye, and everybody says aye, and then you say those opposed, and there's silence. That's pretty much consensus when nobody votes no. But in many small organizations, people run things by consensus. Nobody has power aside from that delegated for a specific job. Okay, communal organizations, communally governed organizations operate that way. It would be fun to try to have the United States governed that way, but it works in small organizations. It takes communication skills, it takes compromise, it takes different sorts of skills than representative government does. Okay. The macro system specifically refers to the consistencies across the setting. So it's not synonymous with culture. It is the way the notion of culture is dealt with within an ecosystem framework that's based on settings and microsystems and roles and relationships. What Bronfenbrenner is doing is helping us with the problem that so often we say that cultures differ, or that something happens because that's part of the culture. And Bronfenbrenner wants us to think a little more thoroughly about what that really means. Culture doesn't cause anything. So when we say, well, you can't change that, it's culture, or that's caused by culture. Culture exists, it doesn't cause things. Because in Bronfenbrenner's view, development and change happens because of the activities that people are involved in. And those are always proximal processes. So at the developmental level, we have to be thinking about the activities and the microsystems and the kinds of settings that people are involved in. And when we get them to aggregate, and combine those together across a fairly large group of people who deal with things similarly, then we have a macro system. It's the biggest one that we can define. To the extent that that is overlapping with the culture, that's fine, but Bronfenbrenner doesn't really need the notion of culture if we talk about macro systems. But he wants us to be focusing on what are the consistencies? How are things done in this particular group? How are differences between two large groups represented in the way they do things? How are the roles different in those groups? How are the relationships different in those groups? Then we can talk about macro system differences, because they extend beyond the specific experience of an individual to the whole set of consistencies or similarities that person is exposed to. macrosystems change constantly, but what we mean when we say a macrosystem changes is that the microsystems and the mesosystems within it, the similarities, the consistencies change. People's behavior changes. Roles change. That's how you get a culture to change. You change what people do and how they develop. Then the culture changes. Sometimes macrosystems change because new activities, new resources, new settings, new activities appear in them. Technology, for example, changes macrosystems dramatically. But if you think about what the technology is and does, one way to think about it is that technology provides new settings, new ways of communicating, new possible ways of connecting mesosystem settings. And it changes at the individual microsystem level the pattern of activities, roles, and relationships that happens in those settings. And that's consistent with proposition F. If I add a television to a setting, I change what people do and how they relate. I create new roles. None of you lived before television. Some of you may not have had them, but you're unaware that there weren't any couch potatoes. Couch potato was a role created by television. There was no reason to... You know what happened if you were a couch potato before you had a television? You were catatonic. And you sat there. What were you doing? Watching the radio, right? What did people do before television? They ate meals together. They had primary dietic relationships. They engaged in joint activities that became more complex. They listened to the radio together. All around. They played music. Their own. They made it themselves. They listened to their neighbors play music. And we never published research on how bad television is for kids. And if you want to know the half dozen things I just decided not to say, I'll be happy to tell you some other time. So macrosystems are influenced by technology such as television, cell phones, iPods. Websites. Okay, what else do I need to say about macrosystems? Macrosystems change, and that means that microsystems are changing, mesosystems are changing, and they often involve, for developing people, decisions in the exosystem. Okay. Television studios, advertising, that kind of stuff, all happens in children's exosystem. People are constantly developing by adapting to the settings that they're in and the conditions of their entire ecosystem, including the technology. So what happens when a macrosystem changes is that people are changing. They're developing in different ways. Macrosystem change may have different effects on children than it has on their parents, than it has on their grandparents. So as a macrosystem is changing, it's changing what for the oldest generation may be very deeply ingrained consistencies and expectations. And remember, their macro system is not just the consistencies, but it's the beliefs and values that underlie those consistencies. So as a macro system changes, people who have been in it for their entire lives may find that what they value and what they believe is no longer being supported by younger people in the macro system. For children or adolescents, the changing macro system is the only one they know. So they're adapting to that. It appears to be the way things are. What that leads to within a household, within a microsystem, within a family, is that you have people who have been in the existing macrosystem a long period of time and now see a younger generation or a couple of younger generations not sharing the consistencies, not sharing their beliefs. That may create differences in the relationships. So as the macrosystem changes, the relationships between the younger generation and the older generation may be different than they were before that macrosystem changed. And you can play in your own head what kinds of things the elder generation is likely to say, you know, along the lines of, young people don't respect us anymore. Their schools are failing them. And what are they learning in school? They're not learning what they should, which is what we learned, even though the culture has, or the macro system has changed. Or get out to the extreme, the younger generation is going to hell in a handbasket quickly, and we're all going to the dogs. I got an email from Cousin Russell yesterday. He's 96. I'll quote him on that one. Macro systems differ, and it's possible to have conflict, not just across change within the micro system as the macro system changes, but you may have macro systems that interface with each other or even overlap with each other. And because there are different ways of doing things and different beliefs that back those up, you may have conflict between those macro systems. You may have people who move back and forth between households with different, that represent different macro systems. Bronfenbrenner suggests that it's helpful if experience is had in more than one macro system. So his hypothesis number whatever, it's not number whatever, it's 30. Whatever is not a number. So Bronfenbrenner argues that it's good for your development to experience settings in different macro systems, settings that represent different macro systems, cultural contexts that are different from each other. So he's a large proponent of experiencing different cultures, of study abroad, of travel, of multiculturalism, of living in integrated neighborhoods, of mixed income housing, of schools that represent more than one social class, etc., etc. Because, for a very simple reason, if you're after a differentiated and valid view of the ecosystem that you live in, which is what human development is about, right, going back to the beginning, if that's what you're after, a valid and differentiated view, then the better you understand that there are different ways of doing things, that there are different belief systems, there are different ways of conducting life, the better off you are, because that's the reality. And the more experience you have in those different realities, the better you are able to understand that one's particular macro system may be the best one around,
but it's not the only one. It may be the most comfortable or familiar, but it's not the only one, and not everybody shares it. And in fact, other people have very different beliefs. And if you don't accept that, then you run into conflict when you're trying to have a dyadic relationship with somebody who experiences a different belief system, who comes from a different macro system, who represents a different macro system. And it's those conflicts between macro systems that cause wars, among other things. But they're a significant part of what makes life dangerous for us, is conflict between macro systems. And conflict arises when people don't understand that there are other macro systems and don't have a commitment to accepting that reality. Questions? A macro system would include a list of things that you share in common, including the way you speak, the molar activities that you're likely to engage in, the set of roles that are present within that macro system, the sorts of relationships that are prescribed or typical in that, and
there can be like a couple macro systems that, like between elderly and youth, in a way that are similar but also have like projects that aren't.
Yeah, that's a nice way to put it, that you have people growing up in the same culture, but that macro system is changing, so people relate to it differently. And as it's a developmental phenomenon that when people first encounter an experience, it's new, they assume that it's always been there. And if you know that that's not the case, because you've been around the macro system longer, you've been in your particular settings longer, then you see the change. The people who are just experiencing the culture or its activities for the first time typically think that they're either doing what everybody else has always done, which may not be true, or that they're inventing ice cream because they assume that nobody else has done this before. I'm always intrigued when people discover, I'm not sure I want to go there. When people start engaging in activities that they really think they've invented, because they're just so excited about them, and find it difficult when they discover that generations have experienced the same thing before. I'll give you one easy example, also non-dangerous for me to get into. It's been really fun to watch American education the last few years discover multi-age classrooms, and some of my colleagues here at the university who have been studying them and promoting them for many years. Sometimes people respond to that as if this is the latest, newest, best thing since sliced bread. And when people who have taught in one-room schools read this stuff that comes out, that this is going to save education, this is my mother's response. The multi-age classrooms, every school I ever went to was a multi-age classroom, and all of my teaching was in multi-age classrooms. What have they discovered? And she can then reel off what she used to do as a teacher in her multi-age classroom, where she had K through 8 students. And then she reads, oh, we have mentoring programs where the older students help the younger. This is interesting. We have differential development collaborative schemes. That's another name for the kids who can help the kids who can't, regardless of age.
So there's a tendency to think that when you're doing something for the first time that you've invented it, and not appreciate the fact that it may have a long history. That's one of the things that irks we elders. But there's also the potential for conflict as the culture changes and people are learning to do things differently. If everybody on the Supreme Court were 30 years old, probably their decisions would be different. I don't know why I said that. It seemed to make sense. Other questions about the macro system? Others will come up. So let's review a bit. And I want to start the review. I'm going to challenge you to think of questions that you have now that we've been through everything except the notion of chrono system, which will not appear on the eco exam, so don't worry about it. It just means the passage of time. I want to clarify one thing that has come to my attention as a confusion, and it's an old confusion, and I think maybe I can clear it up. Maybe. We'll see. And it has to do with indirect links between settings. So let me just tell you what I think would be helpful to keep in mind as you think about indirect links, because the book and Bronfenbrenner are a little bit confusing. And I'll try to straighten, I won't straighten Bronfenbrenner out, but I'll straighten out the book. The fundamental question is, how are settings connected? So when we're thinking about indirect links, we're thinking about all settings and how settings can be connected. There are more than one setting. How can they be connected? And one of the ways that they can be connected is through direct links. And the primary link is the person. A person who goes back and forth between those settings. Another direct link, which he calls supplemental, is another person, somebody else, who goes back and forth between those settings. And together they make up a transcontextual dyad as they go from setting to setting. Okay? That's fairly straightforward, I think. But sometimes let me back up. When settings are connected by the person that we're focusing on for our analysis of the ecosystem, is we always have to have a focused person in order to keep the settings and the links straight. When that developing person is the direct link between two settings, setting A and setting B, then setting A and setting B are in that person's mesosystem. Okay. And then there are indirect links between settings, which include intersetting communication and Bronfenbrenner calls these indirect because they're not people. Sound waves or letters or email, whatever. Intersetting communication and intersetting knowledge. And I won't go over the definitions of those, but they're fairly clear in the book. And there is another kind of indirect link. And that is when there is a person and we're going to call that person intermediate who participates. I'm using A as one of the settings. Participates in that setting, but also participates in setting C. And that person is an intermediate link. In the ecosystem that includes the developing person that we originally started talking about, who is a direct link between setting A and setting B. So the intermediate link is also a person, but in this case is linking settings in the developing person's mesosystem with a setting in the developing person's exosystem. Setting A, like setting B, are ones that the developing person participates in, therefore they are mesosystem settings for that person. The settings can also be linked by another person, and if that person is a link to a setting, in this case C, that the developing person does not participate in, then that linking person is called an intermediate link. And setting C is in the developing person's exosystem. The way Bronfenbrenner describes it, and the way I've described it in the book, there's not a possible implication. There's a clear implication that we were talking about settings in the mesosystem being linked. But the intermediate linking person is a link from the mesosystem to the exosystem. And that's different. So when we look at indirect links, an intermediate link is a person who connects the developing person to an exosystem setting indirectly. If it were direct, the developing person would go into setting C, and then we would have a direct link, and the other person would be a supplemental link. But because the developing person isn't going into setting C, the person who does go into setting C is not supplemental, he's intermediate and indirect. Is all that a help, or you didn't know you were confused, right? And now I've unconfused you, but that confuses you even more. So, I understand it better now. Yes? Yes? Anybody else? Okay. So, intermediate links are between a person's mesosystem and a person's exosystem. They are not indirect links in the mesosystem. If all three settings in this case were ones that the developing person went into, then there wouldn't be an intermediate link, there would be two supplemental links. And the supplemental link may be a source of intersetting communication. Scratch, I didn't say that. I didn't say that sentence. The intermediate link may be a source of communication between settings and intersetting knowledge. The way the developing person knows about setting C is because of the knowledge that the intermediate link brings back.
from that exosystem side. That's why books get revised. Now, what are you confused about? What else are you confused about? You planted questions, right? What do you want to go over again? Oh, I say. Sure. Yeah. So, you name them. To make a good example, setting A is now going to become school. And B, hockey. So, setting. Ring. Okay. Remember, the team is a group of people, the practice is an activity, the rink or the dressing room, all that. Okay? And setting C. You go to UVM, right? We don't have dorms. Residence hall room. I've been corrected for years. Do you know why that is? Anybody know why they're no longer called dormitory rooms? Where does the name dormitory come from? What? To sleep. Right, so why don't we call them dormitory? You can't sleep there. Right? Nobody gets any sleep, so we call them residence halls. You have to reside, but you're not expected to sleep. They just gave up on sleep. So they're no longer called dormitory. You're supposed to reside there and do everything else there. Okay, so we have the residence hall room, the school, and the rink, and in this case, the developing person. What? Okay, but where you're going with this is that Bob is never going to be in his room. No, it's not his room. Somebody else's room. Okay. So, Bob is the direct link and participates in school and in the rink. So, Bob is that person. A supplemental link between school and the rink might be so Frank is a supplemental link. Rink link. The rink link. And then we have the intermediate link. Kathy. Okay. So Kathy is the intermediate link, and she's the link between her residence hall room and school for Bob. And does that help? So Kathy is an intermediate link for Bob between his school setting, where he goes to school with Kathy, and her residence hall room where he doesn't go. So it's an exosystem setting for him. And but he also goes to the rink and probably some other places too. Kathy is an intermediate link to that exosystem setting. And that becomes important then when you look at the hypotheses about exosystem settings, because what happens in Kathy's residence hall room
may affect what she does in school and how she interacts with Bob in school. So if she's had a fight with her roommate, then he ends up spending extra time in school talking to her. That may affect his meso system because he may be late for practice and coach gets on his tail. So he's not participating in the residence hall room for Kathy, but the activities there are affecting him. So it's an exosystem setting, and she's the intermediate link.
If you saw that,
exactly, yes. Wonderful. What she just said was, if you switch it so that Kathy is the developing person, and she's in a residence hall room, then becomes part of her meso system. School becomes, it already is part of her meso system. But then Bob becomes the intermediate link to the hockey rink where she doesn't go. And the hockey rink becomes an exosystem setting for her. Yes, thank you. So if you change the person you're focusing on, you change who's a direct link, who's a supplemental link, who's an intermediate link, and now what happened to Frank? Frank became another intermediate link for Kathy to the hockey rink, because presumably she participates with him, potentially anyway, at school. But none of them go into her residence hall room. They may want to, depending on Kathy, but I don't know Kathy, so. Who Frank is? Frank was the supplemental link in the original case where we have Bob going from school to rink and back. So that's meso system settings for him. Frank goes to practice with him. So Frank is a member of a transcontextual dyad in class with him and at the rink. So he's supplemental in Frank's meso system. If we focus on Frank, that switches. It becomes Frank's meso system and Bob becomes a supplemental link. And then Kathy becomes an intermediate link to her residence hall room for Frank, as she was for Bob. Okay, so you want another setting. Oh, you want Frank to go to Kathy's room. Well, you do want to add a setting, because if you're talking about Frank's room, you've added a setting. Okay, so if you add Frank's room, and Bob doesn't go there either. It's hockey in class, right, for Bob. Frank goes there for Bob. Frank is an intermediate link to his room, which is also in Bob's exosystem now. And then what's more likely to happen, and where this is all going to get really complicated socially for these people, is when Frank starts going to Kathy's room. Okay? And Bob is left out of this, but his good friend Frank is now hanging out with his study buddy Kathy in her room, and he doesn't get to, and that's going to change the nature of the microsystem that's going to happen in school, because now we have something going on, and the relationship between Bob and Frank is probably going to be affected, their relationship in school, and the triad of Bob, Frank, and Kathy, who are all in school together, that's going to affect what happens to them as they start hanging out. And you can follow the developmental scenario. What's going to happen is that Bob is going to feel like a third wheel. Kathy and Frank are going to get closer and closer, and they're going to kind of cut him out. His academic work is going to suffer for that, and he's going to become ineligible to play hockey. I just made that up. But those are the possibilities, the things that you would look for then as the relationships become more complex. For Bob, he is a supplemental link between school and the rink, and he's an intermediate link between both of those and his room. Yes. Okay. Good question, because it gets to the other aspects of the hypotheses about the mesosystem, and it does it in this way. The question is, what if? Let's see. You added another setting. Okay. Let's say hockey rink. Okay. Let's do it the other way. Okay. We got Bob and Frank both playing hockey and both going to school. And so we're focusing on Bob. Frank is a supplemental link to school because he goes to school too. And your question suggests that they play hockey together. They're on the same team. They practice at the same time. They go there at the same time. But in school, they're not in the same classes. So, Frank is still a supplemental link if you take school generally as the setting. But, and they are a transcontextual dyad, but at school, because they're in different classes or different sections of the same class, they're not engaged in molar activities together. They're not experiencing the same relationship with teachers. Okay. So they're not engaged in the activities that would make their participation in the school setting more developmentally valuable for either of them. Okay. So the link is still there. Frank is still the supplemental link. But that doesn't really help Bob as much as it could if Frank were in the same classes or had the same teachers, was engaging in the same kind of work, and had the same friends at school in those classes. So the existence of the supplemental link is going to be more beneficial to Bob's development the more they're engaged in activities together, the more they're engaged in dyadic relations with the same people, and the more, essentially, the more complexly they're connected in that setting. So supplemental links can be pretty passive, or supplemental links can be really helpful. If you have somebody who's in the same class, or has the same teacher, is taking the same course, then you can do your homework together, you can help each other when you miss class, you can help each other figure out the reading, you can share, you know, whatever. You can go over your exercises together before you turn them in. So supplemental links are more valuable if they're engaged in the same activities and the same dyadic relationships. Thank you. Great, great question. Yes, if Kathy and okay, so Okay, that was before he started going to her room.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, at that point, relative to Bob, as the person we're focusing on, then assuming that Kathy and Bob don't participate in school together, okay, then Kathy's involved in the second order network relative to Frank because she doesn't know him. And that came up actually in an earlier, not today, earlier question, but one of the potential values of that second order network, those intermediate connections, is that if two people participate in the same setting and aren't in a dyad together, there are lots of you participating in this setting, right? But many of you are not in dyadic relationships with each other. You may have two or three people that you hang out with, but the people down here probably don't have any idea even that there are people up there. There are. If you turn around, and there are people up there. But you're not in a dyadic relationship. You're not even observing. So it's not there. But the fact that you're in the same class makes it possible and more likely that you will make connections in other settings. So the potential connections are enhanced, or you pay more attention to people in other settings if you know that you share some setting, even if you don't participate with each other there. So knowing that somebody else in the class is from New York City may make that person more salient for you, especially if you need a ride to New York City for spring break. Okay. So that second order network has the potential, I got a couple of minutes, the second order network makes it more likely that particular dyads will be formed. Okay. Because people know somebody who's known to somebody else in another setting. It helps you get summer jobs. We went through that before. It helps you get jobs. It helps you find a place to live. It helps you find a ride, that kind of thing. Introduces you to new people because you share some connection in your ecosystem. Okay. I'll see you Thursday, Friday, Sunday, maybe, and certainly on Monday.